When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by our bannermen, Lord Jason of House Ross, Lady Amanda of House Richardson, Lord Adam the Young Bull of House Parker, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, Sandy the Dragon, Blood of Queen Daenerys, and Lady of Jameson, Lord Brett of House Fry, Sir David of House Fraser, Lord Nelson of the Long Isle, Sir Joshua of House Ross, Lady Liz of House Hendricks, Sir Matthew of House Perry.
Welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight, Fist of the Dragon, Maker of Gains, Co-Lord of the White Claw.
And I am Sir Ezra the Watchful, Stealer of Hearts, Bandit of Time, Hero of Shreve, Co-Lord of the White Claw. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Arya 6 of Clash of Kings, and in our Maester study, we will be discussing Harrenhal.
Yeah, as... Can I say something real quick here?
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 100, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Triple digits.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's exciting. It's cool, you know? Wow. Let me just look back and reflect upon all 100 episodes that we did. So, here we go. Episode one. Okay, I'll stop. No. I was just like, okay, episode one. Wow, dude, great episode. Episode two. Wow, okay, man, three.
Right.
You know, just go back. Yeah, just go back. And just
like six was pretty bad, but you know.
Seven was good. You know, every single episode. Let's just go back and what if we just threw all 100 episodes into one episode and we like submitted it to iTunes and it were like,
oh,
I don't know
my.
How many hours it would be. It'd be like,
yeah, like what's the limit?
Well, it'd be over 100 hours. I mean, because some episodes were 2 hours, some are one, some are like an hour and 45. I mean,
yeah,
God, it'd be close to 400 or 500 hours.
Crazy. Yeah, when you think about it like that, like all the hours that we've spent doing the podcast, plus the follow-up Fridays and show reviews and stuff like that, it's intense. It's quite a bit. It's a big project, and it's something that we love doing. We absolutely love doing this, and we continue doing much more of it, plan on continuing to do much more of it in the future. So, yeah, this is fun. It's nice to have a little marker, kind of a little milestone, where we just look back and say, jeez, can you believe this?
Nuts. Yeah, it's crazy. And I will say real quick, eventually at some point, you know, because even though this is chapter 100, right? So it's episode 100, but we've really done way more than 100 episodes. At some point, the iTunes feed will start to not show, you know, it only holds like 300 episodes, and then it'll kind of drop off. So just know that all of our episodes are, of course, on Podbean, right? So you can go back to Podbean, you can go all the way back to episode one, even stuff before we did, before we were bending the knee and stuff like that. So that is all there.
Yeah.
In the event you click on iTunes, you're like, you know, I want to go back and listen to some of those older episodes. They will click off at some point. So we actually have 209. Well, this will be 210 total episodes on there as of right now. But eventually some of these will click off and stuff. So you will have to go to Podbean to check them all out.
Yeah, and we've actually talked about that, making sure we kind of have an archive, you know, ourselves, at least we've got that to back everything up, because once, I mean, who knows, you know, once Winds of Winter comes out or the prequel, we could at one point have three episodes a week going on, so
Who knows?
It could be crazy. So yeah, yeah. But that's yeah, it's awesome. And actually, you know, we'll bring this up now. We Matt and I, this is not a joke. Okay, we love mm-hmm. doing this, and we're going to keep doing it, and we're going to. We would love to do it essentially as whether it be full time, part time, whatever. Like it is a part time job. It's actually. Almost kind of like full time. We put so many hours into like the research and theories and trying to do stuff for listeners and making this show. So we appreciate your support, whether it's an iTunes review, a comment, a like, a subscribe on YouTube. Literally all of that stuff helps us, and it kind of it helps the podcast. It encourages us to go to more cons, conventions, do more exclusive stuff for our listeners. So. Yeah, I guess I just want to say thank you to everybody who has already done that and who is going to do it in the future. It's just, we really appreciate it, and it really does help Matt and I kind of, reach our goal there. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's all huge. Every review on iTunes, all of that stuff is just huge. Yeah. As I said, it just really helps push the podcast forward, bring in new people, all that stuff. And we have been pushing a lot more stuff out on YouTube, just extra content, right? Just extra content, more kind of specific. Here's a specific subject. Stuff like that, because we have a lot of those great subjects, great conversations sometimes that are inside of an episode. And so, you know, we could do an episode where, hey, we're talking about John, but then, you know, Sam's heavy in the chapter. So we talk about Sam, right? Mm-hmm. But then, you know, you may not know it because it is titled John because it's a John chapter. So
yeah,
that is where a lot of that kind of stuff is going to be over on our YouTube page. If you do want to check out some of that stuff there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We got, I even think next week. So we'll have Lady Raj back on. We'll do another Maester study, with her. And then we're going to have another, YouTube video there as well, with her. So it's great here recently. I'll just tell folks, we've been doing a lot of Winds of Winter theory videos, and we've also been doing a look back at Fire and Blood. And we're looking at this prequel show and what it could mean and talking about the characters that may show up there. So if you want some refresher on that, that's exactly what we're doing. We're doing a 4-part Daemon Targaryen series, also a 4-part Rhaenyra Targaryen. So yeah, that's what we're working on currently. And then we're going to go back to Aegon's Conquest and move through that as well. So,
yeah, absolutely. So, all right, man, how you doing today, bud?
Dude, I'm great. I'm actually, this is awesome. I've had a busy weekend, so I was down with my buddy Lane from an Unexpected Podcast, and we kind of wrapped up Lord of the Rings, which is wild. I bring that up because we are a book club. George R. R. Martin loves Lord of the Rings, is influenced by it, and so I just finished that, and it was sort of like this crazy adventure and journey. Going to be having Matt on later this summer over there as well, so if you're interested in that, we're going to be bringing Matt on, talking about video games and looking at The Hobbit. Later on this summer, towards the fall. So that's a lot of fun. So yeah, it was busy. It was a beautiful weekend though. Absolutely beautiful. And it is here today as well. My sister has her pool up ready to go. So I'm going to go out there later and just kind of, you know, lay out on a floaty and get some of that sunshine. I know that's not always as easy over in Portland though.
Absolutely not, man. Yeah, it's been raining over here, which is great because I love
you love it rain. Yeah,
we had a fire last night. That's how, you know, it was kind of chilly, so
really
it's okay. Yeah. So, yeah, it just comes and goes right now, you know. It seems like at one point in the week it'll be like 90, the next, you know, the next few days it's like, you know, 50 and rainy and cold, so it's yeah. Fine, but yeah, man, I've been doing good. Lady Teresa and I just recorded another Mead, Meat, and Cheese. Editing it right now, just kind of already got it, you know, all cut up the way I want, but now I'm just gonna go and, you know, flare it up a little bit, right? We did some chickpea paste and flatbread, which is kind of like from the Dornish region, so, you know, stay tuned for that coming out on YouTube here probably Friday. I like to release those on like Friday, so mm-hmm. Did that was a lot of fun. But yeah, man, I just been plowing through the books, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like way ahead. You know, sometimes I get in that jam where, and you said this too, where, you know, we're just listening to the chapters and then the next thing you know, it's like, hold on, it's like, okay, because you just want to continue that person's story. So,
yes. Yes.
Yeah.
That's good. That's awesome. Yeah. I've been, let me think here. I was telling you the other day, when we got to this Arya chapter, I kind of went ahead and did like a Tyrion read through, some of Jon and who else? Oh, Theon. Theon, I could not. I just went right down this path of Theon chapters. So when we get back to those, and that for me, if you heard the last Theon chapter, can be kind of a challenge. But I decided, no, I need to invest more time in Theon and learn more about him and really try to see things from his perspective and see how that influences everything else that's going on in our story. So, yeah, I encourage folks to go do those point of view read-throughs. They're fun. If you're a veteran reader and you're not just plowing through this for the first time, you want something exciting, I would highly encourage you to go do those. We did those with a dance, and we also did Storm of Swords, I have not really touched in quite a bit. I know that's something that's one of your favorite books, so that I've been spending a lot of time here in Clash and then dance, so I'm gonna have to dig into that here shortly too, because I always like to be thinking ahead, and we're trying to make these tie-ins, or we're connecting pieces to different parts of the series. So yeah, we got a lot of reading, a lot of research to do going forward. If I can, just a couple things news-wise here, if that's okay, Sir Matt.
Yeah, go right ahead, man.
One dimension. So I, back in the spring, Sir Matt and I were going to go to Ice and Fire Con. Again, that got pushed back, and that is now October 29th through the 1st in 2020. That's down in Deer Creek Lodge, Mount Sterling, Ohio. We're Ohio guys, so we kind of thought we would go check that out. Other podcasters from the Game of Thrones fandom go there. They attend. It's a lot of fun. I don't know at this point if they're going to keep that date, but right now that is what we're looking at for a future con. I was considering Con of Thrones, but just got, I think this was last week, they came out and said that they updated. They're going to go ahead and cancel for this year, and they've pushed it back to August 6th through the 8th, 2021. So next year, that'll be at the Hyatt Regency Orlando venue. But I was like, you know what, maybe I can attend that one. And again, it's this struggle between trying to be socially responsible, wanting to attend these things, wanting to get back to normal, but yet you have that, you're torn a little bit as to what. So it's nice, I guess, if they make the decision to postpone and to cancel. Appreciate that, and we'll see how things are in the fall with Ice and Fire Con, but that's kind of the updates on those. I haven't heard anything on Dragon Con necessarily, but it seems like if it's in late August to September, early September, people are trying to make it work. But again, we just don't know. So
right, yeah. I mean, there's so many variables, right? Because do you keep it? Well, if you keep it, are you going to be able to is it going to be able to financially work, right? Because, yeah. Well, you know, because you can have less people, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to pay to rent out the room and all that kind of stuff. So you have to think about all of those variables as well.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I'll give you an example of that though. So like for Star Wars, celebration, one of the big concerns is that the reason it's difficult to refund some of the money for people who, like me, who paid like literally $900 for a VIP pass, which I've never had in my life, I was super excited to get. They've used some of that to order exclusive prints and get them signed. So some of that money has already gone to that. And it's like, that's something they can still send me in the mail, but I may not get a full refund because they use that money to acquire those exclusive pieces of artwork or a pin or something. You know what I mean? So it's complex and tricky, and I don't it just kind of sucks. You know, it's not an easy position to be in. This is on a large scale. It's happening all around the world, and these cons and organizations are having to make some tough calls. So yeah, there's that. Right now, 2020 Dragon Con is still on for September 3rd through September 7th. I doubt that I'll be going to that one, simply because if Celebration is happening, then I'll probably go to that. And then maybe if I can attend Ice and Fire Con, we shall see. It just all comes down to what is being advised and if it's safe to go. And if that's, you know, we just have to look at that and think about it. So
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. We shall see. You know, it's, as you said, you want to be responsible and all this stuff, but
yeah,
it's tough. Yeah. So, all right. Well, real quick, let's give a quick shout out to our personal social medias, because we do post a lot of stuff on there really quick. You can follow me anywhere on the internet at Super Gains Bros. And you can follow Ez anywhere on the internet at WompRat_2M. I always just see that and we always skip over it, and I always think, well, you know, we should
play
on social medias. Yeah, I mean, you know, we're always talking Game of Thrones.
It's good.
Sharing stuff on there. Because sometimes I share something that I meant to share on the on the Twitter, and then I don't, and then I realize, you know what? I should have put it back there. So okay,
right,
all right, guys. Well, let's hit up the Maester study today. We're gonna be talking just a little bit about Harrenhal, right? Like, because that's where Arya's story, you know, ends up today, and then ultimately is going to be for the next bit, right? She's going to be there kind of for a while, and I thought it'd be nice to kind of go back over Harrenhal. We're going to take our time a little bit here today, because the chapter itself is kind of short. So, yeah, Harrenhal, right? As it is, probably. I think it's one of the most interesting and kind of intriguing castles in just like the bigger history of, you know, A Song of Ice and Fire, and not necessarily the castle itself, right? But kind of just like the lore around it. When you talk about like how it's kind of unlucky and it has, I mean, geez, just in the main book series, there's like 12 different people who are the ruler of Harrenhal, right? I mean, just because it seems like it's just really unlucky. And then some people who do rule it for a bit, you know, they're called like witches and vampires and all of this kind of stuff. And I think it's intriguing, right? It's like an intriguing kind of place. I think the show portrayed it pretty well, too.
Yeah, they did. Absolutely. It is sort of a keep that is cursed. And I hate to even make this connection, but, you know, it's kind of like the post for the Defense Against the Dark Arts position at Hogwarts. That's like you have a revolving character that kind of sits there for a bit and then leaves. That does kind of feel like what Harrenhal is, and that, you know, being given that seat may not be a good thing. It seems like everyone who gets it or requires it, something bad happens to them, or something bad happens to that keep and they're deposed and so on. It doesn't seem to be a place that you can keep and rule for very long. So that's what we're going to talk about here in a sec is the history to that, maybe why it is somewhat like a cursed place in Westeros.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. So Harrenhal, right, it is the biggest castle in the Seven Kingdoms, right? It's built kind of smack dab in the middle of the map, right? Oh, just north of the God's Eye. It is this enormous castle, right? It's supposed to be like, you know, unsiegeable, right? Like it's so big. There's no way that you could possibly siege it on foot, right? It says the walls are incredibly thick. Its rooms are built on such a scale that it would be more comfortable for giants than humans. Has the largest chamber in Westeros, larger than the Red Keep's throne room. Now, the show does, I think, a good job of showing it, but in the books, the throne room is, like, enormous. Mm-hmm. And so it's even bigger than that, right?
Yeah.
You know, it says the castle covers three times as much ground as Winterfell, and its buildings are so much larger that they can scarcely be compared. Its stable can horse 1,000... house 1,000 horses. Its godswood covers 20 acres, and its kitchens are as large as Winterfell's Great Hall. But, you know, today it's pretty much in decay. And a lot of that has to come to, Aegon's conquest, right?
Yeah.
and this thing is just burned to the ground.
Yeah. Well, I think it's twofold too, right? So it's not only was it destroyed during his conquest and burned up by his dragon, but it's also been that the person who's there doesn't hold it very long or hold it enough to really focus on rebuilding it. I mean, if there's good bones there, you could actually kind of rebuild this and have it restored, but no one has the finances or is there long enough or establishes sort of like a family. Like not one family just can kind of keep it and hold it for a long time. It's insane. If you want me to, I can kind of go into some of the
absolutely, man. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, to basically how it's been passed down. So the castle was originally constructed by the order of King Harren Hor, the last king of the Isles and the Rivers. Now that's interesting because we talk about how the Riverlands and the Iron Islands essentially were connected and ruled under by one king, King Harren. And he was not a good guy. So this is the guy who, back in the day, originally had this castle built and during, you know, the let's see here. Yeah. Aegon Targaryen lands on the shores of Westeros, begins his conquest. He eventually arrives in Harrenhal, where he offered King Harren a chance to surrender. The king refuses. It's sort of the arrogance of this keep that, like, it's so big and it's so large that you can't touch me here. I don't care what you've done to everyone else. This is an obstacle that you cannot overcome. And the coolest part to this is Aegon just takes his dragon super high up into the sky above the clouds and just comes straight down on the keep. You know, it's not like I'm going to fly over your walls and have archers or whoever take me from high towers. It's like, no, I'm going to start way off in the distance, go way higher than you ever thought that I could go, and I'm going to come directly down on you and destroy you. And it's what happens. I think that's the idea, is that you think with Harrenhal, you have high keeps, these high points, you have the high ground, if you will, but a dragon can definitely, you know, kind of counter that. So that's what happens. And so from there, we kind of move into, let's see. Yeah, okay, so Sir Quentin, who was the master at arms at Dragonstone, once Aegon makes destroys and takes out King Harren, it's given over to him. But wildly enough here, 9 years later, Quentin dies from a fall from his horse. He's his grandson, Gargan, takes over, who quickly gained a bad reputation for taking every advantage of the Lord's Right of the First Night, you know, sort of like that really kind of bad where upon marriage, the Lord of the Land there can go and have rights. Yep. And yeah, it's a bad thing.
Right, yeah.
So yeah, that happens, and then he is killed by a rebel known as Harren the Red, who claimed to be a grandson of Harren the Black, who was King Harren. After he kills him, he declares himself, you know, Lord of Harrenhal, and then a year later, he is slain in battle. So, like, within the first 30 years, you have a couple of these guys, a couple different people who they can't even really pass it on to a son without, or if they do get that far, then that son is killed and not able to keep the house and keep it in the family, if you will. So then House Harroway in 44 AC is able to acquire it. But that entire house is killed by Maegor the Cruel because of Queen Alys, who was there. There's a whole thing on Maegor and his wives and how bad that was. But both Harrenhal and Lord Harroway are killed. Every man, every woman, and child. So the curse then starts to go from there to, like, okay, it's not even just the Lord of Harrenhal that's bad off here. It's those that are that surround him. Like, and that goes back to Aegon's conquest, where essentially Aegon went in there and just wiped out House Harren or House Hor, essentially. So it's debated whether or not the Harren the Red is actually a descendant, because essentially Aegon went in there and just, you know, knocked out an entire house. Same thing is happening with Maegor here. Not an entire house, but like a lot of you know, children. Anyone with a drop of Harroway blood is what it said.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean let me just we'll go back really quick here, right? Because I definitely want to talk a little bit about, you know, some of the other houses like Lothston, right? Like, they're really interesting. And then the Wents, right? I mean, I think they kind of hold it are the best. But just in the main series, okay, right? So in A Song of Ice and Fire, we have, so since 298 AC, and we're in roughly 300, right? Maybe a little bit past it. Mm-hmm. You have, right, Shella Went, Janus Slint, who holds it for literally like a month. I mean, you know, like Tywin Lannister holds it for a little bit. Armory Lorik holds it for a little bit. Roose Bolton. Peter Baelish is named the Lord Paramount of the Trident, right? And he is actually the one who it's kind of given to, but he actually never goes there and takes it. Mm-hmm. Right. And then in the show, we know he dies. So there's kind of another unlucky end. But then after him, right, while he's off doing his thing, it's still being held by people, right? You have Vargo Hoat, Gregor Clegane, Polliver, and Bonifer Hasty, right? I mean, literally, it's like this thing is just gets passed off. It's like everyone who touches this thing, and most of these people die, right? Like the Gregor Clegane dies, right? You know, I mean,
yeah,
you know, he kind of comes back, right? But dies of poison. You know, Roose Bolton, you know, he might get killed, right? I mean, he dies in the show. You know, of course, he doesn't get it in the show, but I mean, so that's a little bit different. We do know, you know, that it's possible, you know, he's going to die too. And then, you know, Gregor Clegane, Paul Oliver, he dies, right? And so it's just crazy to think, like, everyone, it's like, do not name me, you know, like the Lord, you know, Lord of Harrenhal.
Right. No, it's not a good thing. It's scary. Like I said, you bring up a good point. Like, even years later, I mean, you get so far away from those names of like Harren and Harroway, down to names like Went and Lothston, and what happened to them. I mean, how strong, who during the Dance of Dragons is holding that. They have a terrible ending as well. Like, it's bad. It's really bad. It's definitely, there's gotta be some, whether there is an actual curse to it or it's just a bunch of misfortune or whatever that happens. It's just too much there to be coincidence. There's something going on.
Yeah, I'd be like, nope, I'm good, man. I don't want anything to do with this place.
Yeah. So it's, we'll see. I mean, do we have thoughts? I guess while we're right here, taking a second, like on Harrenhal in Winds of Winter, will it be?
I don't know. You know, it's hard to say because the show just kind of we don't go back there. For any reason, but then, I mean, you know, it's close to the God's Eye, so you'd have to imagine that in the books we're gonna see it or go back to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of think, you know, that Baelish may get in a bit of trouble in the Vale and may have to fall back on this alliance with the crown or the throne, Lannisters, whoever you want to, you know, whether it's Tommen or whoever, and may have to go actually back to Harrenhal. We don't know yet, right. If he, just depending on how things work out there in the Vale, but he may be outed there and may go back there and may come to a bad end, like that he may have some kind of crazy ending there. We just don't know. I mean, it could be Lady Stoneheart stuff, you know.
Yeah, totally possible,
because she's creepy and weird and has almost like that cursed vibe. Just to have her sneaking around like Harrenhal would be just a little, I know she's obsessed with the phrase right now, but you know, once the area is cleared a bit, I could see her and the Brotherhood Without Banners making a run over there. And if she learns anything about Baelish or Baelish's involvement, she would definitely want revenge. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I know, it's crazy. So, okay, well, I want to talk a little bit just about some of the other people that held it, right? So, House Lothston, right? They're kind of the ones for me. You know, we did a big episode on the Lothston Shield, right? That was kind of our Christmas episode 2 years ago. And they are like really kind of interesting, right? You know, like their sigil is a black bat, right, on a field that's like silver and gold. And then, you know, you have Danelle Lawson, right? She shows up, or we kind of hear some stuff about her. Like, some people think that she was literally like a vampire, mm-hmm. right? And then she like rides into battle, and she's like a boss from everything that we hear, right? That she's the mad. And so they kind of hold it, and then we don't really know like what happens to them, right? They just kind of like die out. It's kind of unknown. We just know that it is brought down in the reign of Maekar the First, and then it moves on to House Went, right? So they're kind of interesting because House Went, right, is, you have one of them who is one of the Oswald Went, right? He is a member of the Kingsguard, right? Mm-hmm. And he's slain at the Tower of Joy.
Yep. Yeah, that's an interesting connection. Like all of those folks are that you mentioned, whether it's Lothston or Went, like they're given that from the Targaryens. Yes, there's that strong connection there. And there's also a one of the reoccurring themes there is that you gain that house. Baelish is kind of interesting that he's more of a trickster, kind of a guy with information, sleeky type of guy. These other guys are all like military people. Like they're very... they're given that because they were the master at arms. Like it actually, right. Several times the master at arms, whether you're at Dragonstone or the Red Keep or what have you, that's a spot that that you can gain. So it's Baelish is a little bit different. I if you go back and look at all of them, They all had some military commanding strength or whatever, and it was a, that was a reason you would give them Harrenhal. So, because it's still a formidable keep, because there are no dragons. I mean, at this time, because there are less dragons and stuff, and as long as you're not opposing the Targaryens back during their reign, although then you know you were good. It was a position of strength that you could hold. Right. So, it's an interesting area to look at, and the people who hold it and what happens to them in their houses, and then you know how they kind of seem to disappear a little bit, and it's not a good thing. Not a good thing at all. I mean, House Slint is essentially trying to, you know, the whole thing there is that he's trying to make a name for himself, for his sons, and develop a legacy, and it's just immediately donezo. No way, not going to happen. Baelish is essentially trying, he has no, I mean, what's his big, like, this is his way, I guess, to kind of make, he seems to know, by the way, that there is something wrong with that place, and that's not a place that's very appealing or whatever, it's just a title that you get to have, so.
Right. Count me out, right? Like, I'm good, right?
Yeah.
I'm out. I do not need anything at all to do with this place, man. I'm mm-hmm. good, man. Count me out. So, all right. Well, that's definitely just, you know, some news. And, of course, well, before we, I mean, just real quick here before we move on. I mean, obviously, then if you want to talk about Harrenhal, I mean, the tourney at Harrenhal, right? I mean, you know, that's crazy that, I mean, you can talk about it. Well, it brings the whole realm down. So
I know, dude. Yes. I mean, yes.
So, I mean, there's obviously that. So, all right. Well, as let's move into the reread for today, where we'll get to Harrenhal. So this week we were into Arya 6. Last week we were with Tyrion, right? That's where Tyrion, you know, tells Cersei that Stannis and Renly Baratheon are confronting each other, right? That she, you know, she, and then he uses the opportunity to, you know, poisons kind of a strong word, really, for what he does.
Yeah.
I would say he more so plays a trick on her, right? You know, just kind of plays a trick on her, and then he ultimately ends up confronting Grand Maester Pycelle about, you know, his actions, right, regarding the information that Tyrion kind of told people. So there's certainly that. So this week we're in Arya 6. Last time we were with Arya, she was on their way to scout a village, right? Gendry finds out that Arya is a girl, forcing her to reveal her true identity. The village turns out to be occupied by Sir Gregor Clegane and his men, and Gendry is captured. During a rescue attempt, Hot Pie panics, leading to Arya's capture as well. Later, a spearman kills Lami rather than carry him. So this week, 8 days pass before they leave the village. Each day, one of them is tortured by the Tickler for information about where valuables and food is hidden, and the whereabouts of Lord Beric Dondarrion, which, of course, they don't really have any information on. Finally, they are marched to Harrenhal to serve under Tywin Lannister. Arya, after complaining about being assigned to the kitchen, is assigned to the the understeward in the Wailing Tower, Wyse, who is kind of a Wyse is kind of a interesting character. So, let's dive in here. So, fear cuts deeper than swords. Arya would tell herself, but that did not make the fear go away. It was as much a part of her day as stale bread and the blisters on her toes after a long day of walking the hard, rutted road. She had thought she had known what it meant to be afraid, but she learned better in the storehouse besides the God High. 8 days she had lingered there before the mountain gave the command to march, and each day she had seen someone die.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh. Yeah, I mean, the mountain in this chapter, right, and the men surrounding him, right, they're just, this is what they're doing. They're going around and they are going to all of these little villages, all of these, you know, unmarked towns, and just demanding information and then just slashing and burning, right? Looking for information on Beric Dondarrion, and this, which is, you know, one of Ez's favorite characters, and this is really also kind of a Beric Dondarrion chapter. Right, Ez? I mean, this is where we start to get some of that. Well, like, I heard he died here. Well, I heard he died here, right? And so the interesting thing about that is, you know, okay, well, did he actually die that way, right? You know, or, you know, the story gets bigger and bigger and bigger, or, you know, we know he dies many times. And so, well, he did probably die that way, and he did probably die that way. And so it's just, it's kind of interesting, right? When you think about just point of view and perspective and all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So there, this is, I guess as we look at our major just big talking points and takeaways for this, Beric Dondarrion out there, he's almost like this Robin Hood, you know, who is like maybe fighting for the people, but the people don't know who he is or really, they know about, they understand that he's significant and maybe there was some rumor beforehand, but they don't really know anything. That's a secret, they're on like a secret mission, man. They're trying to stay out of the way of the Lannisters and especially the Mountain. I mean, they're also trying to hunt down and where they can, they're trying to help out and stuff. But it's wild. It's really unfortunate that you see these people being tortured for this information and they have no idea,
right?
And it just shows you the cruelty behind the Mountain, because one day there's like someone will give information. Well, that they went north. The next day it's they went west, then south, then east. Well, we've covered every direction. No one's giving anything concrete. You got to look at this and say, these people aren't giving you anything. Plus, they know you're just going to kill them afterwards. You've not shown any reward for giving information. So what does it matter? That's tough. It's just, it's crazy. Arya kind of looking at this and seeing people being pulled out for whatever reason, trying to say like, well, if I don't look at him, he won't pick me. There was no logic to this, whatever. Everyone was seen and everyone was going to be called upon at some point during their travel to Harrenhal. So yeah, it's bad. I feel it's one of those... kind of like harsh realities of war where Beric Dondarrion and his men can't do anything about this right now. They are doing great things, but unfortunately their whereabouts being unknown is causing a lot of pain for these people, you know, and even though they're trying to help, they're, I think this would have, see, I kind of think these people would have been killed anyways. I think they're held on to because they're trying to gain some information. They're trying to whatever, but you look at other villages that the Mountain has been to and they kill, they do whatever, and move on. You know, now they're this new tactic, well, not really new, they've been using it where they pull people in and try to acquire information is especially hard to take because it's just prolonging the inevitable until they get to Harrenhal. But, yeah, it's wild. It's a gruesome sort of beginning to this chapter.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's you know, that's going to be Arya's story, right, for the next little bit, right, is just, I mean, we see a lot of hardships, a lot of pain, a lot of kind of gruesome stuff, right, with what's going to happen with Harrenhal and kind of the Mountain and all these people that are kind of, you know, in this party and company that we'll see here. And so, you know, we see that in the chapter, right, each day they're really just kind of hammering, right, you know, all of these people, all of these questions, you know, as you said, right? How many, when, what banners do they fly? Where do they go? Where was the village? And people don't know, you know, where is Beric Dondarrion? And so they just kill him, right? They're literally just killing all these people who have no idea what's going on.
No, they don't even know. I mean, like, they don't even know how to tell. It's just nuts. Like, this is where, you know, they're just men who are, I don't know whether it's just bored or whatever. Like, information that they get. I mean, you're not going to... Are you following every single one of these leads or whatever comes out of a panicked person's mouth? Like, are you sending forces north? I mean, what do you tell Tywin and others? Like, you have 50 different, you know, accounts as to where they're at. How is that helpful? You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's not even really that great of a process in trying to acquire information. And it's not that... I think what they're trying to do is say, we're going to show so much violence here. I think they're... Like, goodness, I mean, some of the guards would take women out, and they beheaded a woman, actually, once because she used a rock to hit a guy who was taking, you know, her out into the woods, and they just kill her. And they're trying to show these people, like, look, we're willing to kill you. It's like, no, we know that. I mean, you've killed pretty much everyone, so despite what they tell you. So what good is this doing? And that just shows you sort of the brutality of this. As they move through that, they do talk at one point though with All for Joffrey. I want to mention this guy. He's one of those guys who was talking about being a Kingsman. So even though he's saying, you know, my son is a gold cloak and that he's a good Kingsman and everything, it did not matter. They could do anything they wanted to these people, and it did them no good at all. So
right, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, okay. So, all right. So again, they're hammering these people, right? And then, you know, You get a lot of internal dialogue here, obviously, from Arya, right? Where, let me see here. It's like, you know, they're talking about how they're marching and stuff like that. It's like, by the time they marched, Arya knew she was no water dancer. Cyril Pharrell would never have let them knock him down and take his sword away, nor stood by when they killed Lommy Greenhands. Cyril would never have sat silent in the storehouse, nor shuffled along meekly among other captives. The direwolf was the sigil of the Starks, but Arya felt more a lamb, surrounded by a herd of other sheep. She hated the villagers for their sheepishness, almost as much as she hated herself. The Lannisters had taken everything. Father, friends, home, hope, courage. One had taken Needle, while another had broken her wooden stick sword over his knee. They had even taken her stupid secret. The storehouse had been big enough for her to creep off and make her water in some corner when no one was looking, but it was different on the road. She held it so long, as long as she could, but she finally had to squat by a bush and skin down her britches in front of all of them. It was that or wet herself. Hot Pie gaped at her with big moon eyes, but no one else even troubled to look. Girl sheep or boy sheep, Sir Gregor and his men did not seem to care. So, yeah, I mean, man, it's just heartbreaking, right? I mean, they're really, really just starting to show you, like, this is why Arya makes a list, man.
It is. One of the things, and I'll read this. This is going to be hard for people. This is, you know, again, I mean, if you're reading this series, you know that there are some pretty brutal things that are in this series. That's why it's an adult series.
Yeah.
But Arya gets a broken lip for, just chatter and things like that. One boy of three would not stop calling for his father, so they smashed his face with a spiked mace. Then the boy's mother started screaming, and Rafe the Sweetling killed her as well. Like, it's bad. She goes on to kind of say that even if you were brave, you still died screaming. It didn't matter at all. So to her, it's survival. You're in the survival mode. What can I do to just survive, to just make it? If you are picked, you might as well be brave, is sort of what she's seeing from that woman, because she's going to be killed anyways. You know, so right. if you can summon that courage to be brave, then yeah, go for it. Now, Gendry is able to be spared because he admits that he forged the helm. And right. Smiths, even apprentice smiths, were very valuable, and they're too valuable to be killed. So that helps him out. He's spared, essentially, because of his skills. So, and they're going to use that to help the Lannister cause.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. So let's see. Where to jump after that? Right. You know, they were, you know, so they're taken to serve Lord Tywin Lannister. At Harrenhal, the Mountain told them, "You're traitors and rebels, so thank the gods that Lord Tywin's giving you a chance. It's more than you'd get as outlaws. Obey, serve, and live." You know, it's not just, she heard one wizened old woman complain to another when they had, they were bedding down for the night. "We never did no treason. The others come in and took what they wanted, same as this bunch." Then, right, Lord, let's talk about Beric Dondarrion a little bit here as,
sure.
Okay, right? It's like, Lord Beric did us no hurt, though. And that red priest with him, he paid for all they took, you know, mm-hmm. paid. He took two of my chickens and gave me a bit of paper with a mark on it. You know, can I eat a bit of paper, right? You know, and so a lot of these people are just in the middle of this whole thing, right?
Yeah, right.
Go ahead.
Well, there, at least you get that Beric and his men treated them with kindness, and right. there was a different sort of, even if they were manipulating them with a piece of paper or whatever you want to say there, they're
right.
at like least
an, it's,
trying
an,
to
it's
be,
an IOU or something, right?
Yeah, they're trying to be honorable about it, and it's for a cause or whatever. So yeah, you might lose a few chickens, but your daughter and son are not going to be killed tomorrow. And that's exactly what, like, that's the difference, you know, and this is where you see, these are the good guys, these are the bad guys. I mean, the problem, and you go back to Eddard Stark hearing about what the Mountain did, and that he's essentially a mad dog, and right. that he's a wild man. That's the problem, is that this is not, even during times of war, there are like war crimes, you know what I mean? And these guys are definitely committing those crimes. This is just senseless killing, and it's, despicable, you know. So that's where you see like another level to this. I don't know. I think Tywin Lannister would rather maybe not know. I think he just lets Gregor sort of do his thing, and it's sort of like that's on him. You know, I'm not like he knows that he's doing it for. It's kind of an unspoken thing. He's doing it for Tywin, but yet there's never any exchange of like, hey, go do this for me. So you have that. You're able to deny later on that you knew anything or had it, that all. It can be laid at the Mountain's feet versus Tywin's feet. It's the same thing that happens during like the sack of King's Landing when the Targaryen babies are killed and stuff. You know, in a brutal way. Well, Tywin kind of that the Martells will lay that at his feet, but truly it's like Sir Gregor is who ends up fighting for his life later on,
right?
For that, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's tough. But I mean, Beric is just it's why I like Beric Dondarrion. He's an awesome dude, and there's something magical going on with the Red Priest in him. And
right.
He is being resurrected.
Yeah, and so so this is later, right? This is later, I guess, later in the chapter when Weiss is talking about him, and we start to get this. I just pulled it up on search, and so we start to get this in this, and then in some of the next chapters, I guess, is where it really kind of picks up. So you know, it's like there's this is when she's talking to Weiss, right? Like towards the end of this chapter, and she says, "There was always talk of Beric Dondarrion. A fat archer once said the bloody mummers had slain him, but the others only laughed. Lord Lork killed the man at Rushing Falls, and the Mountains slain him twice. Give me a silver stag, says he, don't stay dead this time neither." So, you know, in this, and then this stuff, it comes up again, I think in another chapter as well, right? So it's just, I think it's great, right, where you start to get this, because if you're reading this for the first time, you're like, well, you know, we don't know about coming back to life yet. And we don't know about, like, the Red Priest and R'hllor and all of this stuff. And so it's like, well, okay, are we just hearing, like, weird rumors, you know? Like, like, let alone, like, oh, wait, this guy can come back to life. Which I think is great when they actually, when you see it happen, right? Like, later when we see it happen.
Right.
Like right in front of our eyes. And it's the first time you see somebody come back to life. And then it's really starts to make this whole, like, it really all starts to click. Like, hold on a second. This R'hllor business with, like, you know, because R'hllor is really, well, you see some stuff with Dany, right? And we see the others. But now we're starting to see this other god, this other side of the equation. And like, wow, they have some serious power, man. I mean, Melisandre, you know, whether it's through some sort of alchemy or something, she survives poison. You know, Beric Dondarrion can come back to life. Right. I mean, it's the magic really booms here in A Clash of Kings.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, one of the things, I think the frenzy, too, by the Mountain to try to find Beric Dondarrion is because he's been killed before. Like, and we're hearing these rumors, and we start to realize, well, that could just be they thought they killed him. But no, we're realizing, no, he actually has died and has been brought back. And so now it's sort of like, how do you kill a man like that? And how do you kill his cause? Like, what do you, if you can't kill him, I mean, that's typically what you do is you'll take off the person who's leading that group. You're going to try to take him out. Well, you can't because he's being resurrected. And, you know, for those of you who have looked into the gods and the theories behind all of that and what George R. R. Martin has said about that, is it just blood magic? Is it some type of, you know, are all the gods connected in some way to blood magic of some kind? What's the common thread there? But definitely, whatever it is, these red priests and priestesses seem to know more about it and understand it and are using it to their advantage, whether it's tricks or whether there is actually some type of magic going on. The people in Westeros don't understand it. We haven't seen anything like this. So it's going to cause, it causes them to, it's a big double take moment where you're sort of like, wait a second. I mean, this is, you know, the Seven don't have this kind of power as far as we know.
Yeah.
So, who are these people bringing in these different gods and stuff? So, and if they do, some people are out there going, the Seven have power, just wait. We'll see about that and as we get to it. So yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's going to be kind of the theme moving forward as we learn about the Brotherhood Without Banners, and it becomes more of a legend is growing right in front of our eyes. We've heard Sansa sing about legends and the stories of these other tales, but now we're seeing Beric Dondarrion become a legend right now. And I love that. That's why I like him so much, and I love the Brotherhood Without Banners. One, it's a sick name, and two, it's just like they are out there fighting. Three, they're also carrying out Eddard Stark's like last orders. Okay, so let's go. I wanted to mention too, though, so as a part of like Arya's development, she is, while she's sitting there, and this is kind of middle of the chapter, and then we can bounce to some of the stuff at the end. As you say, Weiss is interesting, and what happens to him later on with Jaqen H'ghar is something that Arya will ponder over for a while. She's looking at these different individuals, and she starts to, as you say, she was developing her list. This is why she develops her list. She starts to look at those individuals who are maybe lazy or cruel or smart or stupid. Why? Because she's trying to survive. And the more you know about your enemy and your prisoners, you're able to formulate a plan, maybe, to get out from underneath them or to get away. So she's trying to, you know, acquire that knowledge right now. For example, I thought this stood out to me for a second. A person who doesn't make her list is a man that they call Shitmouth. You know, and seriously, does,
yeah, I know. What, it's just some of the names, like, you just get going and you're just like, what? Like,
I know. What? Where did that come from? It's because he has foul language. But if you ask for an extra piece of bread, he would give it to you. So although he presented himself as a fierce, angry, maybe in front of other Lannisters, he talked a lot of you know what. Well, but privately, I think he has sympathy for these people. So Arya looks at that and says, you're not on the list, but I also see you as maybe someone who I could use to help me out later on. You know, and so that's, it just shows you her intelligence and that she's analyzing and evaluating, you know, these guardsmen to try to formulate an escape plan or whatever. And then the next paragraph after that, if anyone, this, I'm not going to read the whole thing here, but if you ever want to go look at, like, why does she hate each individual and why are they on her list, she actually goes over that. She says that she's polishing her hate the way that Gendry would polish his horned helm. And she goes over that she hated Polliver for Needle. She hated Chiswick, you know, who, old Chiswick, who thought he was funny. Rafe the Sweetling, who had driven his spear through Lommy's throat. She hated him even more. She goes on here, Sir Marin for the killing of Syrio, the Hound for killing the Butcher's Boy, Sir Illyn, Prince Joffrey, so on. So she goes over that. That's not the full list. There's more. And she goes over exactly why she hates each one of them and just gives you that quick sort of reminder as to why this person is now on my list. And again, that list will change and it will be added to as we go on with our story.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And so, as I just think about it's the next couple of chapters are all relatively short chapters, so it's gonna be intriguing for the next couple of weeks as we're like, okay, well, you know, because they're all kind of building, right? And so we get to the Dany chapter and stuff like that, and you know, just we're in this weird stretch in A Clash of Kings as we're gonna start setting up, you know, we've been talking about that, right? Okay, so like, a lot of beginning chapters, okay, they're setting up. Well, now we're into that, like, okay, then we hit our phase. It's, you know, how a story goes, right? It's like a roller coaster, up and down, and up and down. So now we're getting to that big push where it's like, we're going to start getting to stuff with, like, you know, Arya and Jaqen H'ghar, right?
Yeah.
And the, like, meat. Which, the meat, man, we're getting right into it, right? Which is great, And that's where we're headed, right? With Jaqen H'ghar and the list and Arya's, you know, becoming the character that she's going to become, which is a badass who may or may not kill the Night King. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. Yeah, I mean, tie that all the way in.
It all starts here.
Right. 100%. So, you know, it's funny too. You think about locations. Harrenhal is a significant location for her now. And so I think about things that we saw in season 8 and things that may happen in Winds of Winter. And even some of the stuff that we saw, like with Walder Frey and stuff, and her, when she comes back from the Faceless Men, I'm thinking some of that is going to be different. And you look back at maybe some, oh gosh, you know, wouldn't it be significant for her to do a really cool kind of moment back at Harrenhal later on? You know, when she comes back here again and she's recalling how evil a place this was and how she barely got away, you know, and all of this. Because as they're entering here, one of the things, just a funny line as we kind of wrap up here for this chapter, but, you know, Hawpie doesn't want to go. Why? Because there's ghosts in there. And Chiswick says, you know, he's kind of saying, Baker boy, here's your choice. Come join the ghosts or be one. And it's sort of like, you know, so it's a scary place, and it's to be talking about all of these magical things with Beric Dondarrion and the Red Priest, and then Arya and Jaqen, to have the setting be Harrenhal, I think makes it creepier.
Right.
And you know about the lore, and you're sort of like, this would be the time to turn on a magical moment. You know, in King's Landing, there's less of that effect because they don't believe in it. There's more that presence of maesters is kind of stuffy and overwhelming. But here at Harrenhal, you still see the scars of dragons. You know, you still see that, and it's sort of like, I can believe it now. I've heard, you know, I understand, like, you can actually see the effects of that, and dragons are gone now, but yet, this is where we're going to start to develop some of those, increase the magic, if you will.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And everybody kind of sees it, yeah, and we're going to see it, yeah. And again, Jaqen becomes a much bigger deal in the next chapter. This is just kind of, this chapter's, it's kind of short. I mean, really, it's just getting them to Harrenhal, and everything's going to just pick up from there, so... All right, as well, man, you know, we've done 100 episodes, all right? It is, how does it feel, you know, to say that?
It feels great. Yeah, it's awesome. The further we get along, I start to feel like these markers. So when we finished A Game of Thrones, I was like, yes. And as you say, we're into now pretty much the meat of A Clash of Kings. Like, we've gone through the introductions of, you know, Davos and Theon, and now we're pushing into a lot more like heavier chapters where some pretty cool things, like a lot of the theories that we discussed way back during Fallout Friday, we're now getting into the nitty gritty of those. And so I'll just tell listeners, be ready, because Matt and I have decided that we're going to, for example, we almost could have deviated here and talked about the character Whis for a second at the end of this,
right?
And talked about the connection that how does Jaqen Hagar? So we're gonna table it, because later on we're gonna talk about what happens to Whis and how Jaqen, what he does to Whis, is something that Arya thinks about in A Feast for Crows, you know, more than a book plus later. You know what I mean? So that's sort of what's fun about this, is that the longer we go on hitting 100 episodes and continuing, we get to make more of those connections. And it's almost like we're weaving Fallout Friday back into all of this. We still have, again, we're still requesting that people push us those ravens. We've collected quite a few of them, and we're getting ready for a pretty big, you know, air quote, Fallout Friday. Not sure when we're going to do it, but that's going to be part of our YouTube series as well. It's going to be fantastic. So, yeah, it's neat, man. I'm excited. Just because the deeper we get in here, we're going over those lines. I mean, as I'm rereading this, I'm highlighting some of these lines saying, this is significant to this theory. And I'm earmarking it, and I'm putting a little note in my book to say, when we cover that theory or it comes up again, I now have like the exact line where some of these that have been well-accepted theories harken back to. So I can go back in my book and find those, and we can understand why people decided to think the things that they did. Because we had an interesting conversation about Jaqen Hagar and whether or not he was actually the man in the cage or not. You know, like that
right.
What was his mission? Where was he going? Why is he going to, why is he a part of the Night's Watch? What is it that he's trying to acquire? Those things are really interesting in a reread to look at. And that's what we're going to continue to do. So for me, it's awesome. I'm super pumped about it. And I know you are too, right?
Yeah. Absolutely, man. Yeah, it's great, right? We're really at the, because you know, next week, right, we're gonna be talking about Daenerys, and we haven't talked. You just have these long stretches, right, where you just don't talk about Daenerys, and you know that next week we're back to talking about Daenerys, and in that chapter, man, we're talking about the House of the Undying. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you want to talk about gods and power and all of this stuff, like everything kind of changes in that episode. So it's great. Clash Kings, really, it's like Game of Thrones. OK, wow. You know, we're getting set up here. Game of Thrones sets you up for the political side of it. A Clash of Kings is what sets you up for like the magic side of it. And so that's it. Just Yeah, goes further and further and further.
Right, with warring and tactical stuff in the as the backdrop too, which is wild. So yeah, I think it's great. I wanted to mention too, just before we kind of sign off here, we have, and this ties in. So you said we're going to be covering Daenerys Targaryen next week, right?
Right. Yes, sir.
So yeah, we're going to be getting back into that. And another plug here, the reason why you should be, if you're able to, follow us on Twitter at BTKcast, is the Captain's Report, essentially we've moved over there and we're running polls. So from time to time, I'm going to bring them on here. And I want to throw this one out there because I want to, I know a lot of our listeners, you may not follow us on social media. You just listen to the podcast and that's that. And that's fine. It's an extra effort to, go over and participate in those things. So every once in a while, I like to bring this on to the show. Because my question had been, and this is the theme of where we're going and the connections, just as Sir Matt did today, trying to make a connection to season 8 and trying to piece all this together. What were we shown in season 8? How is that affecting how we read the books? Because it is. You know, as we read the rest of this story, we are reading it with the knowledge and the viewing of season 8. And I cannot help but to, it is impacting sort of what I'm seeing and how I'm thinking. And that's very, very unique. But the poll that we recently ran for the Captain's Report is, will Daenerys Targaryen burn down King's Landing in Winds of Winter? And, slash A Dream of Spring. And actually, it was pretty close, but most people said no.
Yeah.
53% said no. And so that's the challenge. I'm trying to challenge people a little bit. There's some other really interesting ones that I'm going to bring up in the next couple of chapters, some polls that take things that we saw, and I want to put it to a vote. What do people think? Do you think we're actually going to see that outcome in the books? And right now, I mean, just as the poll stands, we have people saying, no, they don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. That's really interesting to me because my counter to that, go look at some of our YouTube content, is that I think the reason it's close is because, one, people are, it's hard to kind of, accept now, but like, what was said to them? What was said to Dan and Dave? What was that outline that George gave them? Like, why is it that you would say this wouldn't happen? To those that are saying no, what's the counter? What's the counter evidence for that? It could be that there's a lack of evidence for it in the books, maybe, is what people are saying. So, interesting, fun conversations, and we'll kind of keep analyzing that and thinking about Daenerys Targaryen as we move forward. Because, Sir Matt, how can you go into a Daenerys chapter now? And what you've been doing is, like, you've been looking at the bells. The number of times that a reference to bells goes off, right?
Yeah, and, I mean, it's just something that comes right to my mind. I mean, now that we've covered that, right? I'm just like, oh wow, like that, boom, that just kind of jumps right out at you. I mean, I think just because
it's the reference, right? It was just eight times in one chapter. Yeah,
exactly.
That you highlight the bells, in his hair. Like, wait, why? Yeah, like what's the reason behind that? I mean, you can mention it once. Why do we have to keep coming back to it? Why is it repeated throughout the chapter?
Well, and here's something, right? And this is something, you got to think about too. In the books, we've talked about this, right? The difference between a TV show and the books, right? Danny does have the one moment with Khal Drogo, right, in the House of the Undying, right? When she sees him, right? We see that in the show, but that's it. Like, other than kind of her braiding her hair, right, and she sees some Dothraki and stuff, she doesn't really, like, reference Khal Drogo again. But she thinks about him all the time in the books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she does. She does.
And
all
so
the
that,
time.
It's a much bigger thing.
Yeah, exactly. You're exactly right. So as she's encountering even, like, new lovers and stuff, let's just, I'm going to do this just because, again, it was a shorter chapter and we're diving, we're prepping for a Daenerys chapter. Literally, when she hears a bell, and I've been pushing myself for another Daenerys reread here to go through this point of view, but she will see some of the Dothraki, or she'll be in this position and she'll think back to Khal Drogo. She also thinks back to, why was she in that position? Why was she married to him? Well, it's because of all the things that happened around the time of her birth and what was going on in King's Landing and what was going on with Robert's Rebellion. Like, all of that. So she thinks back to that being a good moment, even though something, air quote good, that comes out of that. The loss of her child is big, weighs heavy on her. The trickery with the blood magic and so on. And then she acquires dragons from that. It's a big time and moment in her life. So she thinks back to it all of the time. And then she's also thinking about, how did she get there? What were the causes that drove her there? Barristan Selmy will be a reminder of that, and we'll talk her through that. And she starts to think about those things. And so you watch her, and if you watch it through the lens of, like, are there any, you know, why bring up the madness? Why does Sir Barristan and others do that? Why do they bring up the madness of the Mad King? It's brought up, and you talk about the burnings and then her thought process. You can see how maybe slowly, I don't think that George R. R. Martin does things that are, like, a lot of the things that that happen, those big moments where someone's killed or someone does something, drastic. Like, okay, Eddard Stark, we didn't see that coming. People didn't see that coming. Like, and then you look back throughout the reread and you start to kind of say, was there evidence for this? He's willing to play it subtle for a long time and then drop a bombshell on you. Like, that's what he does.
Yeah.
It's a part of his writing style. It's that surprise sort of, here you go. There's a little bit of it, and you have to pay real close attention. So I think some people roll their eyes when you hyper-focus on, like, a line or two. But I think the people who are doing that, George R. R. Martin is literally nodding and winking, saying, you got it. You're seeing some of the subtleness to what I'm laying down here and those little breadcrumbs, which are not glaring and obvious. They're not like... otherwise this would be a really predictable series. It's not. That's what it's known for, is being like, wow, that was, didn't see that coming. What did I miss? And then you go back and you're like, wow, the bell's ringing.
I know. So. I know. Yeah. You never count anything out, right? Just never count anything out, because it's one of those things where it's like, oh, you know, you think about it, like Hodor, right? Hold the door. Like, there's clearly no way, like, that we obviously, right, that Dan and Dave wrote that. Second, I mean, it's like when you saw that for the first time, I mean, did you ever think it was going to be hold the door was the thing for Hodor?
No, dude.
But then you see it and you're like, oh my God, man.
Yes.
I mean, we literally lost our minds.
Minds.
I literally remember watching that with you, Ez, and we were like, hands on our head, like walking around just being like, oh my. To me, it was the biggest, like, Hodor was like the biggest mind melt. In the series, because you're just like, wow. I mean, that is the level at which he writes.
Right. But, you know, I think if you ask people, and during a reread of this, we're going to be looking at this, is there a lot? Is there, like, glaring, really big breadcrumbs for that? And when we initially thought of it, like, no, not really. Like, this is why you, like, there's a little bit. Maybe you can kind of, so that's what he does. That's what he wants to do. He started this back in a Game of Thrones. And he thought to himself, watch this. Watch me lay something here. He had to, unless he thought of that later on and he truly is, like, his writing's evolving. And he says, you know what? How else could I kind of take his name and change it and make it something epic? I mean, he could have done that midway through, maybe, but I kind of think it was one of those things he started with because he knew Bran's abilities and knew maybe where this was going to go. But it's just the evolution of his mind and his story and his writing and his wit. And he sets up, he's really good at setting things up and then saying, okay, I have a lot of different possibilities I can go with here. Let's see what feels right and let's go with this. And that's why this series takes so long to write, but it's also why we love it so much. It's also why it's a series you can, since he sets up all of those possibilities, that's why there are so many theories and you can speculate so much. And not be too, and we could be coming up to with different conclusions on Benjen, you know, Stark or whatever.
Yes.
But the foundation is there for each of those. We just don't know. Like, you could come up with 50 different things for him, and it's like, this is all we really have. So there's not much. You can go any direction. And so he's just mapping this out. Is he? I don't know what he's doing, right?
Right.
Like, I like to say that he is, but. Yeah, we'll see. It's just cool. So it's really cool. So keep that in mind. I guess going forward, we're going to be diving down those rabbit holes and we're going to be looking at this through that lens, trying to say, like, where are those breadcrumbs that led to some of the conclusions in season 8? And we have to keep in mind that we do not know whether or not Dan and Dave altered some of what he told them. You know what I'm saying? Because his answer to was season 8 going to be the same ending was yes, no, that part.
Maybe.
Yes,
who knows? No. Yeah, who knows?
Exactly. He went back and forth, and he was like, I'm not going to tell you which are the yeses and which are the noes. But yes, some of the conclusions will be the same in the book, and no, some of them won't. And so that tells you that they did change some stuff, and it had to fit their story. So it's a very interesting, I think it's fun and exciting. Although season 8 maybe not wasn't what people wanted it to be, for us it allows us to continue that conversation and to speculate and to kind of wonder what did land. And really, I appreciate that because we have years maybe potentially left for the book to come out and for the next book to come out. So what do you do in the meantime? You read it, you get to sit around in a book club and talk about it and speculate. I think that's fun and to reread it. So although it may be a while before we finally figure it out, we're on a journey. We're on this adventure right now, and that's what's cool and fun about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Awesome. Yep. Awesome. All right. Well, guys, yeah, be sure to send us some more ravens as we're trying to build up enough to do a follow-up Friday. We definitely have some, so we'd love to get some more of those. But as it stands, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. Our next episode, we will be discussing Chapter 27, Daenerys 2, I want to say. I hope that is correct. I don't have it. I forgot to put it in the doc. But it is a Daenerys chapter that we are covering next week.
Nice. Absolutely. So if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you in a week, and remember that winter is coming.